From NPR News, this is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. The U.S. attorney scandal has legs, at least according to congressional Democrats. The Bush administration has refused to provide internal documents and staff relevant to the case. So this week, House Democrats upped the ante. They voted to cite White House Chief of Staff Joshua Bolton and former counsel Harriet Myers with criminal contempt. White House spokesman Tony Snow fired back.
In our view, this is pathetic. What you have right now is partisanship on Capitol Hill that quite often boils down to insults, insinuations, inquisitions, and investigations, rather than pursuing the normal business of trying to pass major pieces of legislation, such as appropriations bills, and to try to work in such a way as to demonstrate to the American people that Congress and the White House can work together.
Contempt of Congress is a misdemeanor charge, but can still mean jail time. Congress is directly challenging the White House's claim to executive privilege. For more, we've got Brenda Payton, a columnist at the Oakland Tribune, Erin Audrey Kaplan, contributing editor at the LA Times op-ed section, and Ernie Suggs, urban affairs reporter with the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Welcome, folks.
Hey, how are you doing?
Thank you.
So, Erin, give us a little background about this story.
Well, you know, this has been building for pretty much ever since the Democratic Congress got established, led by John Conyers. This is a probe into, there are a couple going on, but this has to do with the firing of the U.S. attorneys last year under Alberto Gonzalez. And this is really, really crucial, this probe, because it has sort of risen above a lot of the efforts of the Democrats to establish themselves and really challenge Republicans. And so, we've come close to what people call a constitutional crisis, and you have Congress basically facing off against the White House. And it's funny, we talk about, this is against the White House, but it's really Harriet Myers and Joshua Bolton, but everyone, it's an extension of the White House. And so it's really challenging the idea of executive privilege, which, of course, I mean, that's a constitutional term, but it really kind of describes the entire Bush administration, and they've really taken that executive privilege to really unprecedented height. So there's not a lot of precedent for the contempt of Congress charges being successful. But at this point, it's almost like they can't turn back.
Brenda, I want to go to you. You're in Oakland. That's part of the district of Barbara Lee, Congresswoman, who's been very outspoken about the Bush administration from day one. How do these issues play in and around Oakland?
Well, here we're very much supportive of our Congresswoman and very critical of the Bush administration, I would say, in general, pretty much across the board, very strong anti-war sentiment here, and very much a sense that this is a very imperial presidency that is also arrogant and in trying to invoke privileges and using secrecy that seems to be unprecedented.
Ernie, now, folks like Tony Snow are calling this a stunt with no legal merit. Is this the best use, whether you're Democrat, Republican, or independent, of Congress's time?
Well, I mean, there are a lot of issues that Congress can be devoted to and should be devoted to, like Iraq, of course. Immigration is another thing. Right here in Georgia, where I am, state lawmakers and citizens are worried about Peach Care. And Peach Care is a health care program that the U.S. Senate's Finance Committee is looking at expanding. So, there are a lot of things that people feel that Washington lawmakers could be handling more so than this. But, I mean, this is something that's very important to a lot of people, and it's something that may have started out as politics, but it's grown, as Erin said, to something that could become a constitutional crisis. But there's always other issues that can be touched on in Washington.
Want to move on to another topic. It's a tussle between Senator Obama and Senator Clinton. Monday's Democratic debate, they were asked if they would meet with leaders of countries unfriendly to the U.S., like Iran, North Korea, Venezuela. Obama said absolutely. Clinton said not so fast. Clinton is trying to play up what she considers Obama's rookie mistake. Obama is charging Clinton with being obstinate and comparing her to President Bush and Vice President Cheney. This is getting a huge amount of press. Is that, Erin, something that it should be, or is this more kind of like the catfight mentality, tabloids gone news?
Or tabloid going politics, or politics going tabloid, kind of all the same. But, I mean, it's getting, as we get closer to the election, of course, these are the two top Democratic contenders for the nomination. So I think this is kind of predictable. I think with this whole foreign policy issue, this question of inexperience is interesting because at this point, many Americans are desperate for new direction. And in fact, if you, you know, kind of raise your hand and say, I have experience in foreign policy, people don't really want to talk to you because our foreign policy is simply a disaster around the world and in many, many ways. So I don't know if that would, if that Hillary sort of, you know, pointing that out will help or hurt Obama. This is really an area where people want to see a fresh face, where people frankly think Bozo the Clown could do a better job than all of our folks in the State Department.
Ernie, how is that inexperience line playing, you think?
Well, I mean, I think that when you come to these elections and as we get closer to November of 2008, these kind of things are going to come up in all the time. And it's exciting in a way that, you know, these two people, Clinton and Obama, have emerged as the front runners and have emerged to the point where things like this are going to bubble up and become national news. It's playing, I think, the inexperience of Obama becomes an issue with Clinton as she progresses. And I think that Clinton can exploit that. But I think Obama, the way it's playing here in Atlanta and the way it's playing nationally is that he is a fresh face. He is a new person out there, and he can transcend that inexperience into something fresh and new.
Brenda, there have been polls in the past that show that the majority of African-American women in many areas still prefer Senator Clinton to Senator Obama. How do you think things are panning out in your area?
Well, I think that people are getting to know Senator Obama and getting more of a sense of him. I suspect as we get closer, he'll get more of an support with African-American voters. In terms of this issue of foreign policy, I think it was a way for him to distinguish himself from her, for them to distinguish themselves from each other. And I'm not sure that it's going to, her idea that this shows his immaturity or inexperience is going to necessarily play out in her favor.
I want to move on to the topic, a beating of a biracial man in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Three white former police officers were convicted of beating Frank Jude Jr. outside a party in 2004, and it surprised some of the officers who have already been let go by the Milwaukee Police Department. They were acquitted in court last year. So Milwaukee has had a lot of racial tension in recent years. The press have made a big deal out of the fact that Jude is biracial. He doesn't seem to be making even as big of a deal. Aaron, is race the crux of this case?
Race is always the crux of most police beating cases. I find this whole turn towards biracial, which is kind of general since we've had the other category in the census and last census, is kind of I hope we don't continue that, because you know what? Most African Americans in this country could be biracial or quadracial or whatever you want to call it. So suddenly we're all being sort of racially denuded and be called biracial. And maybe the media feels better about describing someone not as black but as biracial. The beating isn't as bad. The history isn't as great. I don't know. I think that's kind of odd. And I really hope that's not a trend.
Just want to mention that these officers were acquitted in state court but convicted in federal court. And Brenda, we have seen a lot of cases where federal civil rights charges, for example, were brought after police officers were acquitted on the local level. Does this have a parallel to other cases like that?
Well, it would seem to that there's a better chance of getting some justice on the federal level if the state is either too politicized or I guess probably too politicized. The issue of the biracial designation in this case is a little puzzling. I hadn't really seen a picture of the person, and I couldn't tell if it was because maybe his race wasn't evident or whether he was with an they then described his friend was black and they were with two white women. So it's a little strange.
Now, Ernie, I want to steer you in a slightly different direction.
All right.
There's a total of 13 officers either disciplined or fired as a result of this case. Continuing strife between urban communities and police officers. What do you think is the best way out?
I think it's, you know, there's talk about citizens review boards. There's talk about, you know, more diversity in police departments, more understanding in the police departments. Right here in Atlanta, we have a case of a 92-year-old woman, as you've mentioned on the show, who was shot and killed by three white police officers who broke into her home. But it has to be some sort of coming to common ground with the police departments as well as with the communities. I mean, there's always that unevenness or, you know, uneasiness about police officers, especially in black communities, especially in minority communities, you know, with illegal immigration, you know, with the growing of different kind of communities in our urban areas. So there has to be some kind of, you know, coming to ground. And I think one of the things is citizen review boards to have a kind of a oversight over police departments.
Ernie, just one more thing. Do you hear from any of the presidential candidates any talk about these kind of issues? To me, it seems as if these issues of police and community have not bubbled to the forefront.
No, and it's still early. And I think as we get more into some more grassroots type debates, I think we will. But I think right now a lot of the candidates are still talking in general terms. They're still talking broad term issues. And I think, you know, these issues like police brutality and, you know, housing and things like that are not at the forefront. You know, these domestic issues that are so important to you and I are not there right now. No one's talking about it, not even Obama.
Aaron?
I agree with Ernie. I think that none of the candidates are not talking about these issues, which, let's face it, have racial components, and everyone's sort of afraid of that. But I have to say, I saw Obama last year. He came to L.A. in one of his many rallies, and he did actually talk about, in front of a huge crowd, about the problem of the prison system. Now, I haven't heard that come out of the mouth of any presidential hopeful, not even John Edwards, who talks, you know, very sympathetically about poor people. We haven't gotten to the racial thing yet, but Obama did talk about that, and whether he'll talk about it again remains to be seen.
All right, Aaron and Brenda and Ernie, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
You're welcome.
Great to be here.
Brenda Payton is a columnist for the Oakland Tribune. She was at UC Berkeley School of Journalism. Erin Aubrey Kaplan is a contributing editor to the LA Times op-ed section. She's with me here at NPR West. And Ernie Suggs is an urban affairs reporter with the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. He was at the studios of Georgia Public Broadcasting.
Your love stays with me. It's just the way life changes, like the shoreline of the sea. But let's not talk.